Good morning, all of you beautiful people. Good morning. Hello and welcome to Working OA Through Harder Times panel discussion. My name is Karen. I am a compulsive overeater.
Hi, Karen.
Hello.
While the topic of this panel is Working OA Through Harder Times, and the speakers all have experience in this particular area, this panel is open to everyone. We will each introduce ourselves and qualify and speak for 20 minutes on the topic of what it is like to work our OA program during life's difficulties, whether those be loss and grief or trauma or any period of time where life simply got harder than usual. We have a timer. The timer will give each speaker a 10-minute warning, a 5-minute warning, and finally a 2-minute warning, kind of like football. Thank you very much. Okay, our first speaker this morning will be Millie.
Hello, hello. Can you hear me? Okay. My name is Millie. I am a compulsive overeater and very happy to be here today. I am going to start out by doing a little bit of reading. And reading is one of my favorite tools. God speaks to me through the written word of OA, and I read OA literature every day. I mean, each one of us does in the program what works best for us, and this is what works best for me. I feel like when I pick up a piece of literature, it's oftentimes God speaking to me and helping me through. This morning when I was doing some reading, I was reading the big book, and the phrase, the spiritual life is not a theory. We have to live it, is one of the things that really, really stood out to me this morning. I'm going to start by reading from a little AA book called Daily Reflections. Since this is about working through harder times, this is a little passage on problem. It's from January 12th in this book, Accepting Our Present Circumstances. This is from As Bill Sees It, the little book As Bill Sees It on page 44. Our very first problem is to accept our present circumstances as they are, ourselves as we are, and the people about us as they are. This is to adopt a realistic humility without which no genuine advance can even begin. Again and again, we shall need to return to that unflattering point of departure. This is an exercise in acceptance that we can profitably practice every day of our lives, provided we strenuously avoid turning these realistic surveys of the facts of life into unrealistic alibis for apathy or defeatism. They can be the sure foundation upon which increased emotional health and therefore spiritual progress can begin. And that's from As Bill Sees It. And then the little quote down below says, when I am having a difficult time accepting people, places, or events, I turn to this passage and it relieves me of many an underlying fear regarding others or situations life presents me. The thought allows me to be human and not perfect and to regain my peace of mind. And it's by reading things like this that gets me through hard times. I can take my little books wherever I go, and I do. I take them with me when I travel. Let me talk a little bit about. Well, I'm going to pass my pictures first. I'm a garden variety compulsive overeater. I've been heavy my whole life. It did really bad things to my body, which is what ultimately ended me up in the circumstance that you'll hear about in just a moment. But I came from a dysfunctional family full of alcoholics and addicts and whatnot. You know, I had the typical hard time growing up with in school and whatnot. I'm a 100-pounder, and so I was, you know, significantly overweight my whole life. And it's tough when you're a fat kid. And the first time I lost weight, I was in my 20s. I'm not going to spend a whole lot of time on what it used to be like because I want to talk about the hard time that brought me to this panel. But I lost 100 pounds at 26 the first time in my life. I was morbidly obese until then. And I did that with Weight Watchers. I managed to keep the weight off for about 3 years. I got to within 1 pound of goal and left, and managed the food plan pretty good, you know, but I was thin for the first time in my life at 26. So it was, you know, it was fun. It was exciting. It was, you know, I got attention that I'd never had before, and took about 3 years for the weight to come back on. And then I found OA in my early 30s and jumped into OA. And I worked the program, and I lost all my weight again. I had gained it all back, and I lost it all again in OA. And I was speaking and doing what I was supposed to be doing. And then I decided I didn't want to do it anymore. I thought, you know, what I said to myself was, surely this time, with everything I know now, you know, not only do I have a good food plan from doing the old-time Weight Watchers program, what they do now I can't do, but the very beginning they had a very specific food plan, not unlike Gray Sheet, actually. And so... let's see, I just lost my train of thought there. I thought, with everything I know now, I've gotten, you know, some spirituality and whatever, I can lick this thing on my own. Well, I didn't keep the weight off at all then. I mean, it came right back on. So anyway, fast forward 22 years. I had a child. I, again, lost another 100 pounds with Weight Watchers and gained it back. Anyway, fast forward to 2002. My life was totally unmanageable. I had a teenage son. I was a single mother. And that brought me back into the doors of OA. I actually had a blatant spiritual experience, which I'll just go into briefly. I was driving to the grocery store one afternoon. My son was out of control. He was skateboarding all over and tagging and doing all this stuff. And, me being a single parent, and I was working, and my life was totally unmanageable. I had filed bankruptcy because the year before I'd had uterine cancer and had to be in the hospital, and I was in total debt, and, you know, all of that. Well, I was driving to the grocery store, and I said, God, I can't take it anymore. I need you to show me what I need to do. I had tried and tried and tried to start another diet, and it didn't work. So I said, you know, said that little prayer. I lost that thought as I pulled into the, you know, looking for a parking space. I pulled into the parking space, got out of my car, and as I was walking into the grocery store, I looked down, and on the curb, in black letters on a white curb, it said OA. That's all it said, nothing else. And then it hit me. Oh, my God. I had just said, God, please show me what I'm supposed to do. So that brought me to my knees, and I went home and got on the internet and found a meeting and came back in January of 2002. It took me about 6 weeks before I got abstinence. So my abstinence date is February 21st, 2002. So I will have 14 years of abstinence next month, God willing. Thank you. So life got a lot better. Life got a lot better after I came to OA. I also did some Al-Anon to help me deal with my son. And I had done Tough Love before that. I don't think Tough Love even exists anymore. But through Tough Love, I kind of got bumped into Al-Anon. And then, you know, definitely into OA. And, you know, it has helped me really, really deal with life on life's terms. Now, you know, I started this out with the spiritual life is not a theory, you have to live it. It really has helped me that I had that spiritual experience when I got bumped in. You know, I'm a tough nut to crack, and I needed a burning bush kind of deal to happen to me. The educational variety is terrific, and I've had many an educational variety of spiritual experience since I've been back here, but it was that one that kicked me back in here and really, really has let me know inside my heart that God is here for me and always has been. God has always had my back, even when I didn't know it, even when I wasn't abstinent, even when I had walked away from him. Now I'm of no particular religion. I don't even know that I believed in God. You know, I did know that there was some sort of a force for the greater good out there, and that's really what I believe today, is that you know, inside of us is the, like they said in the big book, my sponsor said it to me this morning, and I can't remember exactly what it was, but inside of us there's that natural God thing. We're born with it, you know, and somehow we lose it sometimes on as life happens, but it's always there. And I really do feel that it's always been inside of me, and so that has what gets me through the hard times of life. Because I had been so overweight my whole life, I had done really bad things to the joints in my body. And if you'll notice, I'm walking with two canes. I'm handicapped. That is, you know, the difficult time I wanted to talk about and how I got through it. I had a knee replacement in August of 2011. And I had had difficulty with my knees my whole life. They dislocated and whatnot. But finally, it got bad enough that I went ahead and had a replacement. I went to a doctor that was highly recommended to me. And it's a long, long story, so I don't have time to go into it. But he did it incorrectly. I needed a hip also, and he did my knee first. Instead of doing my hip first, and 11 weeks after he did my knee, he did my hip, and the joint in my leg snapped my medial lateral ligament and broke it in half. So I had a knee replacement on August 3rd of 2011. On October the 13th, I had a hip replacement. At the end of October, then the knee joint slipped. At the end of October, I had a surgery to have a cadaver ligament put in my medial lateral ligament. And so they took the other ligament out that has snapped and put the cadaver ligament in there. And that lasted 2 weeks, and that slipped. And so I was left with a leg that was just kind of dangling at the end of my knee. And then I left that doctor and found another doctor, but I had to wait until May of 2012, and he went in there and took everything out and replaced it with what they call a knee joint of last resort. It's a hinge knee joint. It has hinges on it so that you don't need ligaments and that sort of thing. And it's, like I said, the knee joint that is last resort. And I finally said, last resort before what? And he said, oh, Millie, this is the last resort before amputation. So I was that close to losing my leg. And so how did I deal with this, being in OA and through hard times? I mean, I was in and out of the nursing home. I'm a hairstylist by profession. And I have to work. One of my other defects in life is I've been a poor money planner, and I don't have retirement. I'm self-employed. I don't have retirement, so I have to work. And working through all of this has been a real challenge. Now, the only way I've been able to get through it is to have a really, really deep faith in God. You know, I know that God has a plan for me, and I don't know what it is. And my OA fellows and the people in my life were so tremendously wonderful to me through all of this. I can't even tell you how I got through it. they would bring meetings to me to the convalescent home, you know, they call it a rehab. They would, then when I got home, I couldn't leave home because I live up 13 stairs and I had a brace on my leg where it was locked at 100 degrees and, you know, I have a stack of braces this big in my garage. And, you know, extra food just wasn't an option. Now, I did wind up gaining 15 pounds because I was a walker. That's what I did for my exercise. I walked. Me and my big dog, you know, we'd walk all over the place. And I couldn't do that anymore, and I was, you know, I'm just not as mobile as I used to be. And it's without having faith in God and a trust in a higher power in this program to get me through, I would have been face down in every ism I ever had. Now, I don't call myself a drug addict or an alcoholic, but I used a lot of drugs and alcohol when I was, you know, back in the 60s and through all the disco days and all that kind of stuff. I was a very heavy drug user and alcoholic, but I could walk away from that stuff. I could not walk away from the food. You know, I needed the blatant spiritual experience to help me with the food. And it's just been a phenomenal experience for me. I learned how to ask for help. I was, you know, a very, very independent, compulsive overeater who thought I could do everything on my own. It has taught me that I need to ask for help. That people, you know, I couldn't even get my groceries up my stairs. I couldn't do my own grocery shopping. You know, my sponsor would go shopping for me and bring the stuff upstairs when I got so that I could actually go shopping. I couldn't get the groceries up the stairs. People would come over and bring them up the stairs for me. You know, it's been a phenomenal experience. I did try and sue, and that did not go well. I wasn't going to do that, and I was told that I should. You know, even the doctor that fixed my leg said, you know, I don't blame you if you do this. And but they couldn't find an expert witness to testify that the doctor had gone out of the realm of standard care or something like that. So that didn't work, and which is fine. But, you know, what I need to know today is that when I accept what is going on with me and I take a look around, when I look at where my feet are planted right here, right now, today, I'm fine. I'm okay. You know, I can get around now in these workshops and these conventions. For a while, I couldn't come because it was just too much for me. I couldn't walk. I mean, I could have been in a wheelchair, I guess, and had somebody push me. But, you know, I'm so independent that it was difficult, you know. And life still is difficult. It's hard. But I'm adapting. I've learned to adapt. I actually even had to have my car adapted, because my foot was slipping off the brake and onto the gas. And, you know, by the grace of God, I didn't kill anyone else or myself, because I, you know, I'm a really tough nut to crack, and it was 3 or 4 years having that happen before I finally realized, you know, you have got to do something. I got so paralyzed with fear to drive that I couldn't even get out of my own garage. And I said, okay, Millie, it's time. But that's the kind of compulsive overeater I am. And so without the faith in God that I have and the help that I get from all of the lovely people in these rooms that have been willing to go the extra mile for me, it's just been wonderful. You know, and I just can't even tell you. And so I get to give back now. You know, I give back wherever I can. And I always have. But, you know, and people would tell me, well, people want to do this for you, Millie, because you do this for other people. But I couldn't see it that way. You know, I didn't deserve it. I could give it, but I didn't, I had a hard time taking it back. So, you know, trust in a higher power. And like I say, the God of my understanding is inside my heart, and it's the greater good. It's doing the right thing. It's taking the right next indicated action. So my time is almost up. It goes so quickly, I tell you. I want to read one more thing from my poor little book that is so well used from. I think it's December the 15th. It says, "Don't fight your problem. Know that there is a solution. When I fight or resist a problem, I am actually giving it strength and weakening my chances of finding a solution. If I think constructively about a problem, a course of action will present itself. Constructive thinking is to know that a power greater than myself is directing me and that this power already has the answer. In asking God's help with a problem, I take whatever action is possible, knowing that every step brings me closer to the solution. There is no problem I cannot take to God and none for which God does not have a solution." And, you know, another thing that I have learned in this program is that food is not my problem. My problem is that I can't accept life on life's terms and live life in life's orders, and food has always been my solution. So for today, I choose to have God be my solution, not food. And I thank you very much for letting me do service.
Good morning, everybody. My name is Karen. I'm a compulsive overeater. And I didn't have a tummy ache until just a few minutes ago because I knew the mic was coming to me. So I have been lucky enough to have some real cool tragedies in my life. And one of the things that I've discovered in this fellowship is everybody has a story. We all have had our tragedies. We all have had our hurts. We've all had our pains. People used to come to me and talk about their difficulties and say, "Oh, but it wasn't as bad as yours." And I've come to learn that it's not about comparing. My difficulty isn't any worse than yours. My difficulty means just as much to me as your difficulty or tragedy or loss means to you. So I learned by experience to get out of the comparing. And I want to say that now because there's a part of me that said, "Oh, maybe I should have gone last because I want to make sure that I, you know, can top their stories. I have worse tragedies than anybody." But that's the character defect of competitiveness and whatever else there is and not being enough and so on. But the truth is, you know, we have our stuff. I will say just in terms of qualify, because it does say to qualify first. At the end of January, it'll mark 30 years since my first meeting, walking into these rooms. I was 6 when I first walked in. Not really. I'm kidding. I was a little older than that. So I have not been abstinent for all that time, and my ego really would love to say that I've been abstinent since very early on, but I have not. I got abstinent fairly quickly, as I recall, and was doing pretty well for quite some time. After 12 and a half years, my youngest brother was murdered, and that by his wife and the guy she was having an affair with, which launched an incredibly long saga of pain, difficulty, and misery. And I want to tell you that my experience was not one of staying abstinent and clean. I went into a 10-year relapse. The pain got so great that I could not stop eating. And you will see when my picture book goes around, you will see this cute tiny little, I don't even know how old I was. They're looking all cute, making funny faces. And actually, I looked at that one particular picture or those two pictures for a long time before I realized that I had a Twinkie in my hand. I have a Twinkie in my hand in it. And you can see me at a certain point when I was, I had recovered memories in my early 20s of having been raped at age 11. And you can see in the pictures before that, I look like a normal kid, happy and everything else. And then these pictures have, there's no life in my face. Not only is the weight on, but I have, you know, my eyes look dead. There's no light. So those 10 years, I just couldn't stop eating. I probably put on 50 or 60 pounds. I don't remember for sure because my memory isn't what it used to be. And then in February 22nd of 2008, which actually it was my first day of abstinence was the birthday party that year. It was the year, some of you will remember, that we had the birthday party in February, not in January. So I've been abstaining ever since February of 2008. But what I want to make really clear and then to come up to more current, in November of 2014, my partner was diagnosed with breast cancer. And we have been having a hellacious roller coaster ride since then. Now, since then, I have been abstaining. So there's a difference. I abstained through my partner's breast cancer. I didn't abstain through my brother's murder and all the aftermath. I was thinking about, what was different? Now, let me tell you that during those 10 years, I did not stop coming to meetings. I was here. I was eating. I was crying. A lot of you in this room remember seeing me then coming to meetings and crying because I was in so much pain. I just couldn't do it. It was either eat or jump off a tall building. Now, I don't think I really would have done that, but the pain was so great that I just couldn't stand it. And that was it. So, you know, I fell into relapse. More recently, this past December, here's the most amazing part of my recent history, most amazing to me. In December, my partner and I went on a cruise to celebrate the end of her year of breast cancer treatment. She developed a bad infection on the cruise. We spent a lot of time in the medical services place and had a medical disembarkation and went to the emergency room. She's since had surgery. So she's not done. She's okay. She's going to be all right. But here's the thing. We were on a cruise. I had the anytime meal plan, anything I wanted, whenever I wanted. And would you believe, I'm getting goosebumps thinking about it, I ate 3 meals a day, nothing in between. I went to that buffet most meals, went to the buffet once each trip, except on 2 occasions, and instead of using their big plates, I used the small plates. Nobody in the world is more shocked about this than I am. I was on a cruise, and I did not gain a pound. Do you know how awesome that is? I am awestruck by that. And I got goosebumps. Let me see. See, I'm not lying, right? You see him? I had to prove, you know. So what's the difference? What was the difference between Joey, my brother, and now? Because I think that's kind of what this panel is about. And my thought was, the thought that popped in my head was, gee, Karen, perhaps somebody in here can walk out with something in your hand to know this is what I can do differently through my next hard time or my current hard time. And it may just be the magnitude of the crisis. I don't know. But I think it's more, my circumstances and me. I mean, if there's anything more difficult than what happened in the aftermath of my brother, I don't want to know what it is. I remember recovering from the memories of having been raped when I was a little girl and being in therapy and coming to meetings and doing all of that. I came to meetings through all of that, too, by the way. I remember saying, that's the hardest thing I ever did, when I sat across the table from the man who raped me and told him, I know what you did. Well, a few years after that is when I lost my brother. So now I don't say anything is the hardest thing I ever did. Now what I say is, if there's anything harder, I don't want to know. So I did not know anybody at the time who had been through a murder of a family member. Now I know a lot. You know, it's amazing. You have a tragedy, and suddenly the people come out of the woodwork with that a similar, well, not the exact same thing. I don't know anybody who had the exact same thing, but enough people with similar experiences. So I didn't have a lot of people with the experience, strength, and hope of being through, going through a tragedy like I went through to help me. Because that's really what matters more than anything else, or what helps me more than anything else in this fellowship, is somebody who, well, let me take a step back. The reason AA worked from the beginning, and the reason OA works now, in my opinion, is no matter what I say or do, you guys get it. When it comes to food, you guys get it. Because you are me, and I am you. When we talk about the struggles with food, people who are not compulsive overeaters don't understand. They try to be supportive, they try to love us and understand, but if you're not a compulsive overeater, you don't know what it means to say, you know, there's 3 cookies left in that package, I have to eat them. Other people, you know, there's 3 cookies left in the package, okay. You know, my partner eats a couple of pieces of cake or whatever and leaves the rest on a plate. That just is so weird and so bizarre, and I don't know how she can do it, but she can, because she's not me. So what helps me is somebody who gets it. You know, one of my favorite lines about the OA is, and talking to the compulsive overeaters, is I can tell you guys the punchline to the joke without telling you the joke, and you get it anyway. Again, because we have that shared experience. I made that up, by the way. I think. I don't know. Who knows? So back then, it was just another thing I think, too, at the time in the aftermath of my brother is one of my character defects is control. And I think what underlies that, of course, is fear, because to me, fear is under every single character defect of mine. But I find that even today, in much different ways, when everything... Well, when my insides are so in flux and so out of whack that the world is spinning, I try to control what I can. I keep the house tidy and I straighten everything up and everything, you know, everything has to be just in its place. So, in the aftermath of losing my brother, I played a leadership role for the family. I was a family spokesperson. I was talking with the DA. I was talking with the detectives. I was talking with all the TV people who wanted to do shows. I was keeping my parents informed of what was going on. 3 years after my brother was murdered, my mother died, and 7 years after that, 8 years after that, my father died. So it wasn't easy. But let me jump ahead. So anyway, so I did the best I could. I kept coming here and did what I could do and got big, and you'll see in the picture, that last picture you can see. The top weight that I saw on a scale was 215 pounds. Now, some of you are going to roll your eyes and go, wow, that's so much. And some of you are going to go, oh, that's not very much. Because, you know, we all have different top weights. I saw a doctor on Monday. I had a physical, and I said, what is an ideal weight for me, doctor? And she said, for me, somewhere between 160 and 165 would be ideal. She said, at 170, you will feel better. But 160, 165. But don't worry about it now, Karen, because you're doing great and all the stuff going on with you now, don't stress about it. I'm not worried about you, Karen. Don't you worry about you. So that took a huge weight off. No pun intended. That was funny. So, so I got up to 215. And I did not feel good. I did not feel good. But then again, I was in so much pain that I guess, anyway. So, alright, so jump ahead. Marilyn has breast cancer. I am caretaker. I have no life of my own because I am caretaker. By choice, you know, by choice. And also by obligation and by, I'm not, you know, that's just how I am. We talked about how we are, you know, people take care of us. It's what we like to do. We take care of people. People take care of us. I think the main difference for me this time, as opposed to last time, is on that February 22nd, 2008, I started talking with a fellow in this program who I've known for a long time, and we sat on the Thursday night before the birthday party, or the Friday night, actually, I guess it was, and we just sat in the corner, and I started talking and started crying and started talking about stuff, and I asked her if she would sponsor me. And she said she can't really take on new sponsors as such, but what she does is every night before she goes to sleep, she sends an email to her sponsor, and she does a bunch of stuff, and includes writing down everything she ate that day. Now, I had never told anybody what I ate. I wouldn't tell you how much money I made, what I weighed, or how much I, or what I ate. Never. Well, for close to 8 years, every single night, without fail, I send her an email before I go to sleep, and I tell her what I had for breakfast, what I had for lunch, what I had for dinner. That's my plan of eating. Three meals a day, nothing in between, no sugar, no pizza. I've had pizza once since 1989. And if there's a lot of time between two meals and I, you know, if there's going to be a long time between the meals due to circumstances beyond my control, I'll send her a text and say I'm having a snack and I'll have a packet of almonds or I'll have an apple. So that's kind of how I do things. Even, you know, I have this perfectionist streak in me. So no matter what, I'm going to send her an email, damn it. Even after I had shoulder surgery and I could not use my arm, I would lie in bed, and my partner would sit at the end of the bed with her laptop, and I would dictate my email to her so that my email would go. Now, I spoke with her about this, my sponsor, after this, about being able to abstain on the ship and abstain through all of this. And we were talking about how there's something about having that gentle, warm connection, that accountability, that first off, my perfectionist streak doesn't want me to miss a night. So no matter what, damn it, I'm not going to miss a night. And do you know that I am honest? I tell her everything, even the embarrassing things. And believe me, I have had some meals that, oh, my Lord, I wouldn't want to tell anybody. But I tell her, I let go of it. And she has this great answer for if I eat, and I've used this with others, if I eat something that I wish I hadn't eaten, which happens, the answer to that after giving it to her and letting it go is, oh, well. You know, that is much better than the darn sledgehammer that I used to, you suck, you suck, you suck. I don't do that anymore. So before I run out of time, another thing that I want to talk about is my relationship with my higher power. And I don't have time to tell you the whole history of my relationship with my higher power, but I will tell you in the aftermath of losing my brother, I lost that strong connection. I lost that relationship. I don't believe I lost faith. The reason I don't think I lost faith is because I spent time trying to reestablish that relationship with God. I didn't trust him. I believed that, you know, he could have prevented my brother from being murdered. I never lost faith, I guess, which is good, because if I had lost faith, I believe I would not have tried so hard to reconnect. And I talked to my rabbi, I talked to my cantor, I talked to people in the fellowship, I knew I was in trouble the first morning that it happened, when I got on my knees and started to say the third step prayer, and I said, God, yeah, right. That's when I knew I was in trouble. That's when I knew I had to start working on that relationship. Because without a relationship with a higher power, I am screwed. I am screwed, blued, and tattooed. Now, my God used to be, if I do this, then you do that. I had a bargaining God. I don't have that anymore. Now it's, God has a plan for me. I don't know what it is. When things go right, I thank God. When things go wrong, I go, God, help me hang on. Again, that's not the focus of this workshop, so I won't go into all the great detail, but I know that there's something outside of me that's running my life, because left to my own devices, it was a lot uglier than it is now. And actually, it's not ugly now. That's the thing. So I know that things will be hard. You know, my partner was recovering, and we thought everything was great, and the end of the year was, okay, it's all, you know, the treatment is over. 2016, we're starting off, you know, she's going to reclaim her life, I'm going to develop my life, and on we go. Well, that wasn't the plan. Well, that was our plan, but that wasn't the way it worked out. And instead of railing against the universe and railing against God and fighting it and fuck you and oops, all that stuff, sorry, people on the tape and people in the room, my thought was, well, okay, so this is what we have in front of us now. See, that's what's different for me now. Now, what happened, you know, I guess I accept what happens. And then just, you know, and sometimes I'll whine about it and say, oh, you know, I applied for a job that I thought would be great for me. It would be great for me. And I never even heard from them. I kept sending emails, never heard anything back. Okay. So instead of freaking out about it, the thought in my head was, okay, there's something else for me. There is something else for me. How do I know that? Well, maybe almost 30 years of being here and listening to people just like you talk about that and tell me that. So I know that There are always hard times. I know it. Because, I mean, that's just life. And I've lived it. And I've watched you live it. And I've heard you talk about your difficulties. Oh, another thing before I forget. What helped me is talking with people who've been in similar situations. So, for people who are, I have now been fortunate, I guess, to be able to be of support to a number of people who have had a family member murdered. Not necessarily by another family member, but who have had a family member murdered. And others who have just had loss. Husband died, divorce, death of, you know, had to put my cat down, whatever. It's loss. And I now, I guess I'm offering myself to any of you. Call me. Talk to me. We don't learn in this society what to say to people when they have a loss. Oh, he's in a better place. Oh, at least you had him for 32 years. Well, you know, at least he's not suffering. Well, all that sucks. That's not what you want to hear when you have a loss. We don't know in this society how to say, I'm sorry for your loss, and stop there. We don't know how to offer a hug and not say anything. We're not taught that. I learned that here. So I am more than willing and happy to give you a hug, to be a listening ear, to give you my phone number, to give you my email address, and to be of support to you for two reasons. One is, I know what it's like to be on the other side. I've been there. And also, somewhere down the track, you will be able to do the same thing for somebody else. And we will be able to create a legacy of healing and support and care and love and acceptance and lack of saying stupid things to people that don't help. because things get tough. I've done nothing perfectly in my whole life. I used to say the only thing I ever did perfectly was breathe, but even that's not true because I've had bronchitis and pneumonia and I did not breathe perfectly at that time. But what I have done for almost 30 years is keep coming here, no matter what. I'm here. So I will close by saying, this is from the OA pocket reference for members. I think it's from 1988 and then redone in 1984. But this actually comes out of the second edition of OA, of the OA book, and it says, if you remove your body from the truth, when you are ready, the truth is nowhere to be found. But if you continue to bring your body to the truth, then when you are ready, the truth is there waiting for you. And that truth, our promise of recovery, is in every OA meeting. When we join hands, pray together, and joyously, lovingly encourage each other, keep coming back. So please keep coming back. Thank you.
Thank you, ladies. My name is Shirley. I'm a compulsive overeater and a grazer. Do you know how hard it is to be the third one? I just keep thinking about check, check. I can relate to what you guys said. If I had a little checklist, the rape, the unsuccessful surgery. You know, I was asked to, I got a call from the committee to lead the workshop. And the workshop I was supposed to lead was on acceptance. And as some of you in these rooms know, that my license plate is 449 HP. And because I struggle with acceptance. And when I started reading the big book, that story spoke to me so much because I just really don't accept things. I think if I can wish something. I remember as a kid listening to the radio, I thought if I wanted to listen to a radio program that was on at 3 o'clock, all I had to do was set the clock to 3 o'clock, then I could turn the radio on and I'd be able to hear my program. Now, turning the radio on, I'm dating myself, I realize that. Oh, my God. I'm also in, my first 12-step program is Al-Anon since 74, then OA, and then I was 12-stepped into AA through OA. And, when I told the young lady, I was very hesitant in coming. I wasn't sure I was coming to the birthday party. And she goes, hey, you've got to speak on acceptance because of your license plate. And my husband used to say HP meant hungry person if I'm in OA. And I said, no, honey, it's higher power, you know. And I was very anxious. I had a chance to meet Dr. Paul, who wrote the story on acceptance. And I was so excited to meet him. And I took my big book. I wanted, I had my car, and I went to, said 449. I had to show him my license plate. And then what he did, he signed my big book, which I'm so grateful for. He said, I want you to see my license plate. And his license plate was Rule 62. Don't take yourself so seriously. And I really like that. So when I told her I would lead the meeting on acceptance, then I was going through. She sent me some of the itinerary of what would be on, and I'm looking through it all, and I'm seeing this working OA through hard times, and I went, damn, I'm glad I'm not speaking on that panel. And guess what? She changed it. And I talked to my sponsor about it, and she said, you know, anytime you're asked to be of service or anything in the rooms, know that God is asking you. There's a reason that you were asked to do this. I struggle with loss. I've had so much loss these past couple of years. You know, Karen, when you were talking about losing your brother, and I'm so sorry for that. I have a cousin who's a police officer, and he was murdered in Minneapolis about a year and a half ago. And both my sisters lost their husband. And 8 months ago, I lost my husband. So, you know, we're supposed to be 90% water. I ought to weigh 2 pounds. I'm telling you, I do not know where the tears come from. I have to believe that God is watching out for me. And I struggled so much with God when I came in the rooms. So my sponsor had me work on the big book on the chapter to the agnostic. And she had me write on each paragraph. And I knew from going to meetings, I try to focus most of my meetings. I go to big book studies and step studies because that's the program. And I listen to people share their experience, strength, and hope. You might have an opinion, but please keep it to yourself. If you've got experience, strength, and hope, I want to hear it. Because I need it. And you guys are God with skin, you know. And my sponsor said to me, you have to take the steps in the order that they're written in the big book. And, you know, it's kind of like my feelings. I want to pick and choose what I feel, and it just doesn't work that way. So she said, what I want you to do is I want you to create a God of your understanding. I'd been in enough step studies that I knew step 3, that I had to turn my will and my life over to a God of my understanding. And there was no way was I turning my will and my life over to the God of my understanding at that time when I was new, because I came from a very punishing God. And so she let me fire my old God and write an ad for a new God. Now, that may not make much sense to a lot of you people, but it was very, very powerful for me. I was afraid to do it, but she said, I did it and I'm still alive, because my feelings are so strong. I think my feelings are going to kill me sometimes. And the big book talks about how sensitive we are. So she said, what do you think's going to happen if you fire that old God? And I don't know if you guys have ever seen the movie The Raven, but where the sorcerers come and they're zinging their power across and they're fighting over who's going to have the most power. And that's what I thought was going to happen. And she said, well, shit, if that happens, I want to be there when you do that, you know, when you throw that old God in the fireplace. And that's what I did. And by doing that, I took my third step. I feel closest to God when I'm at a park or in nature. And I took my third step kneeling in a park by a tree. And I just said, God, I can't do this anymore. And I turned my life over to God. Well, you know, I forget I turned my life over to God. It's like that pancake commercial. It just keeps flipping over, you know. And, you know, this past couple of months, I have been numb, I guess would probably, overwhelmed and numb is probably the best I can say. I'm grateful for the people in these rooms that I can go to that have been there. I've known what compassion is. I've always had compassion, even as a kid. But I don't know what it's like to be a widow. And I don't like that word. I mean, when I call the insurance company and told her who I was and what the policy number and everything, and she goes, "Oh, you're the widow." When she said that, I couldn't breathe. That word absolutely took my breath away. And I don't know what it's like to, and thank you, Karen, for talking about, you've had 32 years. Yeah, well, I want 32 more. You know, when you're with someone who gives you unconditional love, you don't want to give that up. At least I don't want to give that up. I have a sponsee that has helped me more than she can ever imagine how much she's helped me. And she lost her husband. And I was able to be there for her, but not in the capacity that I could be there for her now, because I know what she's feeling. And I don't like pain. And I got to tell you, there's not enough food in the world that can make this pain go away. There's not. You know, we chose to have a celebration of life for his service. There's a few people in this room that knew my husband. He supported my 12-step programs. He came to meetings with me when the guy who was recording didn't show up. He and another member's husband did the recording. He didn't think I was a compulsive overeater. He doesn't think I'm an alcoholic. Isn't that great? To weigh 500 pounds and have somebody say, "You're not a compulsive overeater," you know? That he loved me for me. It didn't matter. He loved me when I was at my lower weight and at my higher weight. And when he had open heart surgery, his kidneys shut down. So he was on dialysis for 5 years. And we like to travel. And some of you know that, you know, he always wanted to be a truck driver. So when he retired, he got this big-ass Ford F-350 limousine truck, Harley Davidson. I'm telling you, this is a limo truck. I've never, you know. And he loved that truck. We went to the AA convention in that truck. We went to San Antonio. We've been to so many conventions in this. And we would go to Arizona. He loved traveling. Now, this is something I learned from my neighbor about 8-9 years ago. When her husband died, he wanted to travel. And she didn't want to travel with him. And that was her biggest regret when he passed away, that she didn't travel with him. So I learned a lesson from her. So when my husband wanted to travel, I traveled. You know, we had two little dogs, Thelma and Louise. We had our little Shih Tzus. And, you know, we would just throw them in the truck and we'd just take off. And it was so great. And we were able to go to meetings wherever I would go when we would travel. You know, there's nothing more comforting when you've been riding with someone in a truck for 3 days and to see that circle with the triangle in the middle. Man, I'm telling you, that's better than McDonald's. What can I say? And so he would take me to the meetings and stuff. And, you know, we were together a long time before we got married. Because my first husband died from the disease of alcoholism. And I chose to leave that relationship after 17 years. And as painful as that was, had I not walked through that pain, I wouldn't have had 32 years with my husband now. You got to walk through pain. You know, they say when one door closes, another one opens, but it's hell in the hallway. And I know I'm in the hallway right now. You know, I know that as sure as I'm sitting here. I'm so grateful that he was willing to travel on dialysis. We schedule all of our trips based on, we'd schedule his appointments, and then we'd get the timeshare, and then we would, but we went all over the world. My husband was Japanese, and he was part of the internment. He and his family were interned. So we were able to go to Heart Mountain, Wyoming, because they have since built a museum. And he wanted to see this, so we got to do that. I'm so grateful that we did that. we loved Hawaii. We got married in Hawaii. We had a sunset wedding in Hawaii. You know, me and Elvis, Elvis had one, so, you know, blew Hawaii. I said, if I ever get married again, I've got to have a sunset wedding in Hawaii. So we did, you know, and that was scary, setting that all up without my family. You know, my family eats and drinks because that's what we do. And if I wasn't in the program, if I wouldn't have, I'm the one that's changed. They haven't changed. I'm the one that chose to change. And, but I got to tell you, my family was there. When push comes to shove, there's nothing like your family. As crazy and as screwed up as we are, we love each other. And, we had gone to Hawaii, and normally, because we had a timeshare, we would take someone with us. And this last trip we went, he wanted to go by ourselves. He said, let's just us go. I said, fine. So we went, and he wanted to go to Molokai. We always stayed in Maui. And so we went to Molokai, and we were coming back from Molokai, and the dolphins were following the boat coming back into Lahaina. And when we got on the plane, he said, this is the best trip I've ever had in Hawaii. So we had to come home. I had to take my driver's test, which I'm freaking out. God, that 5 years goes really fast when you have between driver's tests for me anyway. And he had to get a simple procedure done for his shunt was blocked. And I dropped him off at the hospital, and I went to take my driver's test. And I came home, and the dog was laying stretched out in the kitchen floor. So I said, I got to take the dog to the vet. So while we were at the vet, we had to have the dog put down. Well, where the dog was there, we got a call that Eddie had gone into ICU. So I run back to the hospital, and he didn't know what had happened. And I told him, I said, they think there's something wrong with your heart again. You have a blockage. So he's trying to say something to me, and he can't talk. So I asked the nurse, I said, can you give him a piece of paper or something? So he writes on this piece of paper, and he wrote, did you pass your driver's test? No. Oh, God, that's just the kind of guy he was, you know? And, you know, we both have, do not resuscitate. So I knew that. And I knew when I came back and the chaplain was there that it wasn't good. But he would not want me to cry. He would want me to celebrate his life. So that's what we did. We got a room. Everything was decorated in Hawaiian. We had Hawaii music playing. And, you know, I have a friend that I go out at fellowship. And he said to me, Shirley, I want you to promise me one thing. He said, don't ever lose the woman that your husband fell in love with. And I don't want to lose myself, but he was so much part of my life. And, you know, so for now, I'm trudging through life with a broken heart. And, you know, you could do that. And being of service is so important to me. And I will share, I will close with this. My neighbor had lost her dog about 2 years ago, and she, one of the radio stations had a promo, if you rescue an animal, they'll waive the adoption fees. So she said, will you come with me? I don't want to go with her. I said, sure, I'll go with you. So I went with her, and you know, she goes, you better bring a leash. I said, I'm not getting another dog. I'm not getting another dog. I said, if I get another dog, it'll have to be a Shih Tzu because they don't shed. I have my allergies, and it'll have to be a female. And no way in the world are you going to find a female Shih Tzu at a pound. Well, her name is Sweet Pea. Poor thing, she was just, she had everything wrong with her. She's blind in one eye. She had kennel cough and a cold and worms, and we just fell in love. So I've got this little bundle of energy now that has brought so much joy in my life when I didn't think I would feel joy. And that's God, you know. One of my friends came over from OA from Vegas, and she stopped by, and one of the little toys that the dog had was a frog. And she flips that thing up in the air and chases it, and God only knows what she thinks it is. But my girlfriend said, oh, frog, she said, I forgot about that acronym. And I didn't know there was an acronym for frog. And it's forever relying on God. So I have to rely on God because I just can't do this by myself. Thank you so much for listening.
Wow, incredible stories. Thank you, ladies, both. Now is the time for questions and answers. Please raise your hand and I will call on as many questioners as possible. Your questions can be directed at one person specifically or generally for the panel to answer. Please be aware that we are recording this panel, and when asking a question, your voice may be audible on the recording. I'll try really hard to remember to repeat the questions. Who would like to ask the first question?
Lily, what are you reading that is in such tatters there? You didn't say what the book is.
The question is asking Millie what book she's reading that's in such tatters. She's got a lovely, very well-used little book, and she's going to tell us what it is.
This is the For Today book that I read daily. And it was from when I was in OA back in the 70s. And when I came back in 2002, I found it on my shelf, and so it's been loved a lot.
Thank you.
Yes, sir. The question that's asked is forgiveness. He said that we may have in front of us or behind us forgiving the people that hurt us, and what's that been like?
I'm Millie. I'm a compulsive overeater. I listened one time when I was driving up to Northern California to visit my son, the Dalai Lama, talking about forgiveness. And he said something that really struck me. He said, to not forgive those that have injured me doesn't affect them one way or the other, but I'm the one that suffers if I don't forgive them. They know not what they did. You know, I feel like the doctor that did this to me did not do it intentionally. You know, he made a mistake. He said himself. You know, he put his arm around me one time when I was leaving. He said, oh, Millie, you've been so good through all of this. If I'd have been you, I'd have gotten a gun and shot me. You know, he felt bad about what he did, you know. And for me to carry a lot of a resentment around against him would only harm me. You know, I've got to make the best of my life. I can't carry that around with me. Because I really don't feel like he did it intentionally. So I have to move on. I have to move past that. Like I said, when I ended my share, when I look at where I am today with my feet planted right here on the floor, I'm fine. So, you know, I have to live with that and not carry the other stuff with me.
Shirley, compulsive reader. You know, my doctors, I had done research, and I didn't do enough research. You know, we all do the best we can. I was hoping. I went to this particular doctor because he was referred to me. And I knew two doctors that didn't give successful surgery. I ended up with a doctor at Cedars who all he does is corrects botched back surgeries. So I went to him. And, you know, so far so good. I have to take, you know, I have to take medication because I don't think I can have another surgery at my age. And as far as my husband's concerned, I worked my program around him. I had no regrets. My side of the street was really clean with him. Thanks.
And my experience of forgiveness, honestly, I have not forgiven them for murdering my brother. This was all, they planned it for several months, and it was all, I mean, it was not an accidental, it was not heat of passion, it was planned. I went to a bunch of anger management and recovery from grief and workshops and things, and I learned a definition. I even had this on my wall for the longest time. A definition of forgiveness is to relieve oneself of a resentment against another. My problem with forgiveness is I still have forgiveness and condoning. Sorry, I'm distracted by the door opening and closing back there. So to forgive means, hey, it's okay what you did. So, I have been unable to separate that meaning for myself. So I cannot say that I forgive them for what they did. What I can say is I don't spend a lot of time thinking about them. Things come up and I do think about them. I also never really, anger is one of my least, I don't do anger very well. So I've had to work hard on expressing my anger and my rage about what happened, about what they did. So it's still tied up together, and I would love to say, yeah, I forgave him, and I am astonished by people who are able to forgive that easily. Whether it is still causing me difficulties or not, I cannot say for sure. But the truth is, no, I haven't forgiven them. Other questions? That was a good question. Yes, ma'am. The first book that Millie quoted from and the reading is?
It's The Daily Reflections, which is an AA daily reader. And I quoted from page January the, I don't have my glasses on. Yeah, January the 12th on page 20.
Okay, the question, I'm sorry, the question asked is, can we talk about the silver linings of what we're in, of what we've been through? Did I do that right?
Yep.
Okay.
Sure. I'm still looking. You know, I don't think that it'll ever go away. I think you just heal. I think the scar is always there. I have to focus on gratitude. I'm so grateful that I didn't have any regrets. I was grateful that I was the caretaker that I was to my husband. I took my marriage vows so, so sacred. You know, till death do us part. And I don't know how to do this. It's for me the hardest part right now, other than he paid all the bills and stuff. So I'm just mulling through all of this stuff. You know, I've had my air conditioner worked on. I've had plumbing put in. I've had a new roof put on the house. I mean, this is guy stuff, you know. I come from where men do this and women do that. And I'm grateful I'm not stupid. You know, I used to be blonde, but I'm not stupid, you know. It's trial and error in talking to people who've been through this and know that nobody could have loved him more than I did. Thanks.
The silver lining in this for me, that's difficult because, you know, I,
was ripped out of my life. You know, I can't dance anymore. I can't walk long distances anymore. There's so many things I can't do anymore. I think the best thing that has happened through all of this is that I've learned how to ask for help. And that was never easy for me. Never easy for me to ask anyone to help me. By gosh, I was going to do it on my own. And, you know, I've had to ask for help. And people are so wonderful about helping me. It's great. And the miracle is I let them, which is, you know, sometimes I still get stubborn and do it on my own. But it's some days are worse than others, you know. Sometimes I feel really sad that I've lost the kind of life that I had before. But, you know, there's other things I can do. And I do them, you know. So it's some days there can be a good silver lining, and others there's not.
Well, my silver lining is a couple things. I learned that I am strong and I can take a lot. It's not always pretty, and I don't do it perfectly. But I can take a lot. I used to say that my mother had a thin cord of steel running through her, and I think that when she died, she passed that on to me. Probably the thing that the best silver lining of all is that I can be of support to other people in a way that I wouldn't be able to before. I have a compassion from experience that is different than a compassion from love and care. So when people hurt, it feels hokey as I say it, but it's true that I've been there, and I know, I never presume to say that I know what you're going through or I know how you feel. What I say is I have been in a similar circumstance and this is how I felt. So, I can be of service in a way that I otherwise wouldn't be able to be. That's my silver lining. Did you still have your question?
Yes.
Okay, the question is what Shirley read.
It's the page, she wants to know the page I read on acceptance. It's on page 449 in the third edition of the big book.
Huh?
Yes.
I saw a hand back there. Did that do you? Hello? Okay, so the short version of the question is, when you can't forgive somebody, even though the program tells you that you should, and you get mad at yourself, how do you deal with that? Was that a good? Great. Got it. Okay.
This is Millie, compulsive eater. What the book tells me is I pray for them. I think you even said that. Yeah, pray for them for all the things that you want for yourself for 2 weeks. And do it from your heart. And even if you can't do it from your heart, act as if, and eventually it lightens that, resentment. For me anyway.
Okay, I saw another hand, but now I lost where it was. Yes, ma'am. Okay, so the question was, did any of us suffer from depression as a result of what happened to us? And what did we do about it? How did we get through it, if in fact we did?
Shirley, I'm still depressed. I suffer from depression and anxiety too. And if I wouldn't have had a commitment, I have commitments at my meetings. That gets me out of bed. I'll call my sponsor. And 2 days this week, I haven't been able to get out of bed. But I knew I was coming here today because a commitment, one of the things that my sponsor had me look up when I was very new, I was in the dictionary as much as I was in the big book. Look up the difference between a promise and a commitment. There's a big difference. So you suit up and show up if you want to or not. And as far as a shower is concerned, I told someone this morning that, you know, somebody is just going to come over and hose me down.
And this is Millie, compulsive eater. I fortunately do not suffer from depression. You know, I've always been the glasses half full kind of girl, which I'm really feel blessed that I have that. But, you know, I had some hard times and I cried. I cried a lot. I forgot to mention that right after I had the original knee done that I got a phone call from my son's, good friend that he was in intensive care in the hospital in Santa Rosa and I was in San Diego and he had left a bar that night and somebody jumped him and he had two brain bleeds and a contusion in his head and he was in intensive care for 6 days and in the hospital for 12 days and I flew up there in the condition I was in to be with him. And, you know, pulling the covers over my head doesn't do any good. You know, I need to take action to get out of my difficulties. And it says in one of the things I read here, and as Bill sees it, provided we strenuously avoid turning these realistic surveys of the facts of life into unrealistic alibis for apathy or defeatism, they can be sure foundations upon which increased emotional health and therefore spiritual progress can begin. I can't stay spiritual when I'm in bed with the covers over my head. It's not possible for me. So, like I say, I'm blessed. I don't have a chemical imbalance, but so that's what I do. I cry. I get it out. I say, this sucks. I pound a pillow if I have to, and I get up and go to work.
My experience is that sometimes my emotions are so overwhelming that I just stay in bed. I don't do it for a month. I don't do it for a week. It might be a day or two. I also know, I learned a long time ago, somebody told me that Overeaters Anonymous is designed to go only so far, and sometimes we need to get outside help. So that's when I started therapy way back a long time ago, and sometimes I need to see my doctor. There are things that OA does great. There are things that OA doesn't do great. So medical, physiological, chemical things, I don't do that here. I do that with my doctor, my experience. Okay, we have time for one more question. Unless everybody's questioned out, in which case... Oh, it's two hands. Jack. Three hands. Thank you. I will... I will repeat that not as eloquently as my sweet friend who thanked us for shining a light on the path that we will all need to go through at some day, sometime or another, and she expressed her gratitude for that. So thank you for saying that. And I saw a question, a hand way back in the back there. Awesome. Another thank you. Okay. And there was a hand over here. Yes, ma'am. The question was how long it's been since Shirley lost her husband?
8 months.
It's 8 months. 8 months. All right. So that's the time we have. I want to thank our timer, Lori. Thank you so much for taking on that volunteering. And thank you all for participating on this panel discussion. You know, the cool thing about being the moderator is, you know, I get the second to the last word, and that is how incredibly blessed I feel to have been part of this room this morning. I remember looking at the program thinking, oh, my God, look at all these other cool things I could have gone to and that I'm not going to get to do, and this is fabulous. You folks have given me such a wonderful gift, and I thank you. So we will say the Serenity Prayer, and after the Serenity Prayer, would everyone please clear the room, unless you're staying for the 10:30 panel, because I think there's one in here after we're done. So thank you for allowing us to be of service, and let's join hands where we can.